Hello again, this is Josh Hankin from SandbagFitnessSystems.com, and today I am joined with a very special guest, Franz Snyderman from Revolution Fitness. How are you doing today, Franz?
I'm great, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Franz and I have known each other quite some time, and normally I start these interviews out, Franz, with just sort of asking people to introduce themselves, but I want to take a little different spin today because I got an interesting discussion recently with a colleague of mine. You know, very few people realize that people like yourself have been around the industry quite some time, and people still think that, you know, trainers get into a lot of these fads such as kettlebells and sandbags and so forth, and don't think there's a lot of thought process behind it. I want to sort of have you take us through your journey about how you got into your current system of training and what you think about the whole idea of things being fads and so forth.
Okay. Well, first of all, probably like yourself, I got into strength and conditioning through personal experience, through wanting to get myself stronger and faster, and you know, I just wanted to become a better athlete, probably like most aspiring trainers out there. And in 96, when I got my personal training certification, I think I was with ACE, I got a hold of some of Paul Check's information. So my initial interest in personal training and anatomy and physiology came from studying Paul Check, so I have to say that that's kind of where my roots started. And from 96 till now, it's pretty much been, much like yourself, Josh, trying to study under the guys and the therapists and the trainers and the coaches that I thought had the best information out there. And it's gone all the way from in the 90s, I think you and I were some of the first guys using the wobble boards and the Swiss balls and some of the functional stuff that people call functional training now. But back then, it was revolutionary. And through years of using that stuff, I kind of figured out that some of it worked and some of it didn't work. So whether it was a fad or not, I don't know. It certainly wasn't a fad then, but it certainly set up this entire functional movement and, you know, the whole balance concept that you see. So for me, I was always a couple years ahead of the curve, as were you. And kind of like the quote that I like to use is Bruce Lee's quote, and it's essentially you use what's useful and you reject what is not useful. So I have always gravitated towards new things, but I've also always been quick to get rid of things that didn't work. And the things that didn't work, I don't use anymore. So the boards and the balls, not that those things don't have a place. I still use Swiss balls. I still use some of the functional tools, if you want to call them that. But at the end of the day, if my clients aren't getting better, or if I as an athlete am not getting better, something's got to be wrong. So from a fad standpoint, I think I've been lucky enough to be able to be ahead of the curve. And in 2002, I was introduced to kettlebells by you. Thanks, Josh, for that. And that is a tool that works. So the tools that are going to stick around are the tools that are really are the tools that work. And kettlebells, as a lot of people know, are not new. I mean, your interview with Anthony DeLugio last week was awesome because it really talked about, you know, that everything that is old is new again. So now we have a fad where all the old stuff now, I mean, I forget the boards and the whoopee cushions and the Bosus and all that, but all the old barbells and thick-handled dumbbells and kettlebells and all these old strongman tools are coming back, and they're now a fad. Is it a good fad? Yeah, I think it's a pretty good fad, Josh. But like anything, there has to be some intelligence behind it. There has to be some coaching. There has to be an element of mastery that trainers and coaches need to learn before they can use this stuff. So I hope that kind of answers your question a bit.
Well, absolutely. That's a great start. And, you know, it's, I bring that up because, you know, you sort of mentioned the trend towards now people associating everything old as good and everything new as bad. You know, do you have a sort of a perspective, you know, of how people can be a little bit critical upon what's useful for themselves and what's just sort of being hyped up advertisement?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you have to take kind of a long view of perspective. So if your entire knowledge of fitness and strength training is from the second that you started studying the entire field, whether it be, you know, picking up a bodybuilding magazine like a lot of us did back when we got into it, or you know, maybe it's your first time getting into it and you pick up a textbook and you pick up the latest research and information, which is good to do. But I think you have to become a student of the experts and the leaders and really the giants that we are standing on their shoulders, to how to use a quote that's probably overused, but we really are standing on the shoulders of some very talented and I'll call them pioneers. You know, these guys from the 19th century. If you read any of Pavel's books, he talks a lot about these Russian guys that really kind of set the foundation for what we're seeing now. So I think for a new student or a new strength enthusiast that's excited about getting into the field, or maybe they're just personally excited about taking their own training to the next level, you really need to study some of the older stuff. I think probably one of the best resources of somebody who can give you access to that is studying from Pavel. And Pavel was the guy who brought the kettlebells mainstream in America. And to date, if you ask me, and I think you'd probably agree with me, he was really the guy to kind of start this movement. You know, whether or not he knew he was doing that, he did. He started this movement, and through him researching the roots of weight training and exercise all the way back to the Greeks, you're really getting a true perspective of what I think a training should be and where it's going. In fact, I even joked about that probably about in 2000 and maybe around 2002. I started telling my clients, I said, you know what? The gym of the future is going to have kettlebells, it's going to have rocks, it's going to have ropes, it's going to have giant medicine balls, it's going to have mats. It's going to be so different than the high-tech machines you see in gyms. And it's 2008, and yes, there's still the big gyms and the 24-hour fitnesses and the bigger gyms that have all the high-tech stuff. However, you're starting to see a lot of smaller gyms that are really setting that entire stage. So I'm not a prophet, but I mean, about eight, nine years ago, I said this entire industry is going to change. And Josh, you have a gym like that yourself. You have you have probably one of the most versatile, interesting gyms that you could ever see.
Well, I appreciate that, man. And you know, I think we definitely also saw that come in at one point or another, and it seems to have really caught on. And you know, you're really become one of the foremost experts in using kettlebells for fat loss. So, you know, pick your brain a little bit about, you know, fat loss protocols, because I think a lot of people, no matter if you're an athlete or not, you know, have a great interest in getting a little bit leaner. No one, I think, goes, man, I'm too ripped for my own good. especially, you know, with the holidays coming around the corner, you know, people want to use these tools. I think one thing that's so attractive to them is that they can do them in their house, they can do them in a gym, and yet they can get a great result. What led you to developing a system of fat loss training behind the kettlebell?
What is our philosophy? Is that the question?
Well, why pick the kettlebell versus doing bodyweight exercises, doing sprints, doing a whole host of other things? What made you sort of lean towards developing a program centered around the kettlebell?
Well, I would say the answer is that because it worked. Because as we implemented in the kettlebell into our training, people lost weight faster. People were more excited about coming back to the gym. People came back with more comments. Oh, it's easier to pick up my baby off the floor. Oh, I can pick up the, you know, 50-pound sparkless bottle and put the results, Josh, is what allowed us to do it. We didn't say, oh, we're going to make the kettlebell be our fat loss tool because that's our business and that's our market. No, it happened backwards. We actually started using the kettlebells, and people started getting way more fit, losing body fat way faster. So Joanna and I said, you know what, we need to come up with some kind of a product because this works for our clients. I mean, we've had huge weight loss with people. I mean, 30, 40 pound weight losses with clients is like, that's just like average. That is not a big deal. We've had more and we've had less. But the reason being is that the kettlebells, they work your entire body. The body is one piece. The body is, it's one kinetic chain. So every single kettlebell exercise that we teach, Turkish get-ups, swings, clean and press, jerks, single leg deadlifts, the amount of energy you can burn during kettlebell exercises is amazing. It is absolutely, I have not found anything else out there like it. And for that reason, we designed an entire program, various workouts and DVDs. We have a book which includes a 12-week diet as well. But the answer, really the question is that the reason we did it is, Josh, it works. People get in shape. And for those of you that are hearing this interview, and if you've used kettlebells for any time, I probably don't really need to speak much more about it because kettlebells work. Done properly and done with some intelligence and a little bit of programming, there is nothing else out there like it. That's why we use kettlebells, Josh, because they rip fat off people's bodies.
Well, what would you say to those people, though, that maybe are wanting to start a fitness program or, you know, haven't touched kettlebells before, are a little bit apprehensive in using them for the first time? You know, is it relatively easy to learn? You know, how do people get started?
Well, I would say, like anything, there is a learning curve, and you would definitely need to get in contact with a coach or a certified kettlebell instructor that knows, one, how to teach it, and two, how to progress you through these movements safely. It is a weight, and you are swinging it at pretty high speeds. So for people that are just getting into kettlebells, first and foremost, it's probably a little difficult to just pick up a book and learn it by yourself. I would definitely recommend that you hire somebody like yourself, Josh, or somebody like me, or Anthony, or one of these other kettlebell experts to really get the basics down. Once you get the basics down, it's pretty amazing how fast people can improve as far as going through more and more exercises. But the basics are the essentials. So if you don't get the basics down, it's like anything else. I mean, I get emails from people, oh, well, Franz, I want to buy your DVD, but my cousin did kettlebells and hurt themselves. So, or my mom hurt her back doing kettlebells. Well, it's not the kettlebell's fault. It's either the lack of instruction, or it's just you had a bad coach that didn't really know what he was doing. So, yes, you can get injured doing kettlebells, but it's not the kettlebell's fault. If I get in a car accident, it's not the car's fault. It's usually the driver's fault. So, yes, you just have to use basic common sense, buckle down, hire a coach for an hour or two, and then you can get the DVDs and the videos, and it goes from there. So that would be my main answer to people, is that you've got to get some coaching. But it's a lot easier to learn to do a kettlebell snatch or to do a kettlebell clean than it is to do a barbell clean or a barbell snatch. And I'm a huge fan of Olympic lifting. I do not do it personally, and I do not teach it because I suck at it. So that's ethically, as a coach, I feel that you should not teach things that you're not good at. And I'm not good at Olympic lifts, so I don't teach them. I know you're very, very well versed in the Olympic lifts, Josh, but that's, I think I'll leave that to you. I think I'll leave the Olympic lifts to you, and I'll just teach the kettlebells.
Well, and I think that's an important thing because, you know, I've interviewed some great coaches I have a lot of respect for, but, you know, we seem to get into, what I say, often silly debates upon different programs and systems and whether or not they work and so forth. And I guess it really comes down to whether or not you can do it well. Huh? I mean, if you can do it well, effective training result, that's what counts, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably one of the most profound thoughts that I've learned has been from Pavel and his entire RKC certification, which is basically that at the end of the day, the sets, the reps, the tempo, these, you know, periodization schemes, they don't really matter if your technique sucks. It just doesn't matter. You're just accelerating the rate at which you're going to get injured, dysfunctional, or you're going to be so bummed from lack of training progress. So I would say that you really need to become a technician. So whatever you do, if you're doing Olympic lifting, awesome, fine. Get the absolute best coaching you can on Olympic lifting. If you're doing kettlebells, you need to, I mean, I've been doing this since 6 years, Josh. I've been using the kettlebells for 2002, and I'm just now really starting to feel like I'm starting to figure it out. So if I haven't figured it out, and I'm an expert, the people buying my DVD or your DVD or the people just getting into kettlebells, they're not experts. It it's not rocket science, but it does take practice. It takes training. It's like anything else. So I would say, as a concept, that's probably one of the main principles that I've learned from experience, is that, yes, sets are important, reps are important, but they're not as important as practicing the skill of what you're doing. So whether it's you're a shot putter, you can do all the kettlebell work and all the Olympic lifting work. If you don't practice shot putting, you're not going to be good at shot putting. Same thing with kettlebells. If your goal is to get good at kettlebells, you got to work with kettlebells. So that, I think, if we ask a lot of different coaches and, you know, some of the guys that you are interviewing and have a lot of admiration for, I would say that we'd probably all agree on that fact, that if you're not doing it well, it's probably not going to work as well.
So it's not really a matter of which program's right, which system's right. It's about which one do you do the best, huh?
Well, yeah, and not every tool is applicable or appropriate for every person. I have some clients that have mental blocks towards using kettlebells. And could they physically handle kettlebells? Yes, they could. But if somebody just doesn't want to use kettlebells, or they have proven in their own mind that they cannot do kettlebells, fine. I'm going to find a different tool for somebody. So, you know, it's yes, tools are important, but it's also the methodology and the awareness of which tool to use, when to use it, how to use it with each client. So that's where the art of coaching comes in. And I by no means have I arrived. I'm still learning every session. Every session I have with a client, every class that I teach, every seminar that I give, I keep learning from experts like you, Josh, and from my own students. So there's definitely an art form to coaching that is really, it can't be bought and it can't be earned at a one-day seminar. It just takes years. And you, Josh, probably more than anybody, have been in the trenches just about more than any other coach I know. So I got to congratulate you on being one of the most in-the-trenches coaches I have ever met, and for influencing me big time. So
I appreciate that. And, it's really quite a compliment. And on that same note, though, you know, can someone pick up your DVD and program and feel as though they'll be safely performing the movements? Is it something that the average person could get and really feel confident with?
I would say with our first DVD, we have a two-part DVD set that actually accompanies our book, which is called The Revolution Kettlebell Fat Loss Program. And the DVD Volume 1 has an instructional component to it. So it actually goes through the basics. It has the clean, has the Turkish get-up, the swings, the military press, the snatch. So it has the basics in there. For somebody that's new, I would recommend that they get that first. Practice that DVD. There's also a beginner workout on that same DVD. On DVD number 2, there's intermediate and advanced workouts, but they would definitely, it's common sense. You have to get the coaching first. Get the movements down. People will be very, very surprised how quickly they improve if they're just consistent with it. And then from there, I would recommend getting our newest DVD, which came out. It's called the Quick Results Kettlebell Workout, but there's no instructional on that. It's just a timed workout for time, and it's 9 sets. So it's a very fast and efficient way to get a very good workout at home with one kettlebell and some bodyweight exercises. So I definitely would steer people towards the first DVD first, just to get some instruction, and then from there they would have the skills and the know-how and the knowledge of how to safely do some of the other exercises. So, yeah.
Well, if I'm going to put you on the spot then, so, you know, it's absolutely amazing now the number of kettlebell DVDs out there right now. I don't know why I would recommend your DVD, but I want you to sort of tell people, you know, why go for your program versus some of the other DVDs that are out there right now. What's kind of unique and different about what you guys do?
Well, I think the way that what makes our programs unique is that the programs that we use in our DVDs are exactly the programs that we use in our classes and with our clients. So you could say that they've been tested on real people. And the results have been tested. So it's not like something we just kind of threw together and say, oh, I hope this works. It's programs and it's complexes of exercises that have worked. And there's, you know, we have our own style of doing the certain type of circuits that we do, but in a nutshell, I'll kind of explain. So for example, the way that we usually do our fat loss workouts, which builds just kind of a general fitness and flexibility, strength, endurance, all at the same time, is that we have two different formats. The first format is we usually do 4 or 5 exercises in a row, usually done from anywhere from about 5 reps to 15 reps if we're doing snatches or swings or something that is a little bit more of a ballistic exercise. But for the most part, they're lower rep ranges, but they're multiple exercises. They're done. So for example, you might do a clean, immediately go into a front lunge, and as you're lunging, you go into a press. So that would be one exercise. Immediately from that, you go into, let's say, some burpees, where you go into 5 explosive burpees. Immediately from that, you go into a get-up sit-up, where you're doing kind of a half sit-up on the body from the ground with the arm locked out overhead. And immediately from that, you'd get up and you would do, let's say, 20 swings. So the way that we design the workouts is that we try to use as many body parts and as many muscle groups as possible with minimal rest. So that's one type of workout that we do. The other type of workout, which I see a lot of people doing, which I think is just an amazing way to go, is you just go for time. And I know Anthony does that a lot on his DVDs, but that works. So what we'll do, for example, in our Quick Result Kettlebell DVD, we have 9 sets. The first set is a 3-minute long set. Set 2 is 2 minutes. Set 3 is 1 minute. Then at set 4, it goes back up to 3. So it's kind of a pyramid where you're doing 3-2-1, 3-2-1, 3-2-1 for a total of 18 minutes of work. And that's the workout. So it's not done by reps. You do as many high-quality reps as the time allows you to do. So I think for people that are so caught up on numbers and they're so focused on how many sets they need to do, the time pretty much just kills that, and it just makes them focus on just getting work done. So get as much work done, high quality work, as you can get done in that minute or in that 2 minutes or in that 3 minutes. So that allows the quality to stay high, but it builds so many more motor qualities. Not only do you get strong, but you build amazing stamina, and you build mental toughness. I mean, it's hard to do 3 minutes of nonstop kettlebell work, and that type of fitness that you build from doing that has a very good carryover to being a mom or being a dad or being a weekend warrior or just, going on your walk. It gives people the reserve capacity to do whatever they want to do in their life. So it's a little more complicated than that, but to simplify it, those are our two types of workouts. And then there's just a lot of different types of exercises that we do within those two models. So
you know, what do you think, you know, having worked with so many people and doing this a lot, what do you think really one of the three top keys to losing fat actually are? There's a lot of discussion upon what those things could be. What, in your experience, what are they?
Well, I think number one is diet. I think we eat too much. As Americans, we live in a very abundant culture, and we're pretty soft and comfortable people. And we, as a culture, we gravitate towards comfort. We gravitate towards pleasure. We gravitate towards ease. So anything that is uncomfortable, anything that does not bring us pleasure, anything that does, that does not bring us ease, is against our physiology and against our mindset. So, for one, we need to start learning how to eat for health. And most people eat way, way too many starches. They eat way too many sugars. They overeat. They eat too much food at each meal. And our basic philosophy first, before we even get people going on the exercise programs, is, listen, if I sit down with somebody, I say, okay, so you've signed up for our program, you're going to do personal training, you're going to take the classes. This is great, but it's part of the package. The first piece of the puzzle is getting your diet in order, and that is always the hardest. I'm sure you've found that with your own clients, Josh, but getting people to change their habits. If I can get somebody to just change two habits, I'm going to see progress with somebody. So maybe somebody's drinking 10 Diet Cokes a week. If I can get them down to 5 Diet Cokes, let's say somebody eats a whole pizza every week, and if I can get them down to half a pizza, so just kind of chipping away at their dietary habits and getting people to eat less sugar, less starches. I am a advocate of eating more frequently. I know you've got, there's other systems of eating out there that actually have people eating less, but what has worked for me and what has worked for my clients is doing more of the meal frequency. So where you'll have a breakfast, you'll have a mid-morning snack, you'll have a lunch, you'll have a mid-afternoon snack, and then you'll have a dinner. And the reason I like the meal frequency is because I find that it helps people not overeat when they miss a meal. Because what routinely happens is if somebody misses a breakfast and they just, maybe they have like a cracker or something for lunch, they overeat at night. And not only do they overeat, Josh, they crave the wrong foods. So if I can get somebody eating small, frequent meals, balance their blood sugar out, the chances of that person overeating and just doing a total gut bomb at night are much, much less. Now, the types of foods that we recommend are whole foods. What's a whole food? A whole food is a food that comes from nature. It's a food that was here 5,000 years ago. Real fruits, real vegetables, real meats, or organic meats if you can get them. Organic chicken, fish, beef. If you can get any kind of grass-fed beef, even better. Lots of clean water, filtered water, just basic nuts and bolts type of food. Flax oil, udo's oil, organic almonds, just eating food that you found in nature. When you eat those foods, your body gets nutrition. So that's why we always start with the diet first, the exercise secondary. Can some people out-train a bad diet? Very, very few. If that were true, Josh, all the people you see in gyms that work out 7 days a week would be really fit and lean and look great, and they don't. In fact, I would say that if your diet is good, you probably can train less. You probably don't have to train as much. So our number one thing is getting the diet under control. And it's eating less. It's eating more frequently, but if you're eating whole foods, they fill you up more, you're eating a lot more fiber. And for like a super fast weight loss, I usually just have guys and girls eat a bunch of protein and a bunch of leaves and some healthy fat. That I've never seen anybody that tried that for 2 to 4 weeks, just eating some nice clean protein frequently throughout the day, some healthy fats like some almonds, avocado, some healthy oils like fish oil, and lots of leaves and vegetables. I've never seen anybody not lose weight. So I know there's a lot of debate out there on you got to do this, you got to take this supplement, you got to do that. I actually think it's pretty simple. The hard part is in getting people to apply it. That's what's tough.
And have you found any techniques that sort of, you know, help people get into the mode of, you know, maybe just taking one thing at a time? Or, you know, what's your approach to, you know, getting people not feeling so overwhelmed so they can feel confident or successful in reaching those goals?
Well, Josh, I think you bring up a really good point, because I think as a coach or as a trainer, it's very easy to get so enthusiastic about your client's success that you end up basically paralyzing them by making them change about 100 different things. They've got to sleep here. They've got to do this. They've got to wear this on their nose to breathe better. They've got to take this supplement. They've got to fly to Canada to get this certain supplement. It becomes so unrealistic, and the client just ends up getting so burnt out and so frustrated that they just don't do it. So I usually just take whatever the biggest offense is in that person's diet. Maybe it's maybe it's a female. She just eats way too many packaged products. Like she likes crackers or cookies or salty things or crunchy things. And I just work on that. I don't eliminate it, because often if I eliminate that client will become so obsessive about it that they'll just binge and then they just blow the whole diet and they quit. So with somebody like that, I say, listen, we're going to set a goal this week, and we're going to eat, instead of eating that whole bag, we're going to eat half the bag, or we're going to eat a quarter of the bag. And what I find is that that person, once they build a confidence, like, wow, you know, that was really not that hard. I made it a week. I ate less of that bag of chips that I usually eat. If I can do that with this, I can do that with something else. And then we start chipping away. Some people move faster than others, and you do have the odd A-type personality that is so extreme, Josh, that they just make a decision and they cut everything out and they lose the 30 pounds. But the problem with that is that person who's an extremist can go back and be an extremist in the opposite way and start binging again. So I think finding a balance in there is probably the key. But I do chip away at people's biggest offense. So if it's alcohol, we try to chip down on the alcohol. If it's they're just not eating, which I find, if they just don't eat, I get them to eat small meals, and that's the goal. So every case is a little bit different, but you have to find what is the one or two things that, if that person changes, is going to make the biggest effect in their life. Maybe it's water. Maybe they don't drink any water. Maybe they drink 10 Dr. Peppers a day. Well, you know, if you can get them down to 5 and eventually get them down to 1, eventually get them down to 0, you're going to do some huge things in that person's life. So, but the key, Josh, as I talked about, is just taking one or two things and trying to, you don't need to eliminate it, just cut it back. And if you can get it to the point where you can just deep six it from their diet in general, golden, then you're fine.
Well, and you bring up a good point, because I know a lot of people still think they can sort of out-train their diet. You know, what's the truth in that? You know, how far can people go if they don't make serious changes to their nutrition?
Well, I think it depends on how much damage has been done to your metabolism, because you get some clients that come in and they have done so much damage to their bodies, and they come in, they're basically saying, help me. The medical establishment hasn't been able to help me. My chiropractor hasn't been able to help me. I haven't been able to help me. Heal me. and it's tough. So for somebody like that, you have to set realistic guidelines and goals as to how far you can get with somebody like that. You know, not that I want to put a governor on somebody's goal, but there are some people that have got some serious issues. And with people like that, you might need to get like a professional, somebody who can do some hormone work. And there are some tough cases out there. I would say for the average person who's somewhere kind of in the middle, who's just overweight and hasn't completely damaged their body, that trying to seek a balance is really the goal, because life is short and you don't want to just eat Brussels sprouts and sprouts and fish all day. I mean that's not fun. So what I usually tell people to do is Monday through Friday, and keep in mind this is for people that have pretty much achieved their goals, or they're on that road and they've already seen progress, is that they eat very clean during the week. Low starches, low carbs. You know, you basically match your carbs with your energy intake. If you're not working out a lot on that day, you don't need a lot of starches on that day. So that person, Monday through Friday, is pretty much going to eat kind of in cruise control. They're going to eat mainly proteins, healthy fats, lots of fruits and vegetables, lots of water, that's it. On the weekends, I let them ramp it up a little bit. So I let them go out once or twice. They have a meal. They don't think about it. They don't obsess about it. They have their ice cream. They have their pizza. They have their hamburger. They have whatever they want. They have their enchiladas, their Mexican food, whatever it is for that person. But you try to make food not an obsession for people, to where they, oh, my God, I had this meal, and they get so panicked. No, it's not a big deal. If one or two meals a week is bad, it's not going to make a difference if the other 35 are good. So it's a percentage game. So if I can get somebody to eat clean Monday through Friday, a little fun on Saturday and Sunday are not going to break the boat. So that's where I say you have a little bit of leeway with people, to try to teach them that it's okay. In fact, I actually recommend for most people to have one or two cheat meals a week, because it just keeps them honest. And it keeps them from going on these crazy binges where they just completely blow it and gain 10 pounds and then get totally frustrated and end up worse than they were. So that's what I recommend, is for people to try to achieve that balance. But you do have to have discipline, and if it were really easy to be lean, everybody would be lean. So, it's very doable. Anybody can be lean and can lose body fat, but you do have to be disciplined at least 80% of the time. So if 80% of your diet and your lifestyle is clean and disciplined, the other 20% is not going to make a huge deal. So.
And, you know, do you think people sort of obsess over the wrong things? Sometimes they get a little too caught up in maybe the secret supplement or the program, the one exercise they're doing that's not going to lead them to their sort of fitness goals?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I think the media and the marketers really know how to push people's button, and they basically know how to make you feel really inferior, and they know that if they put some flashy cover model or guy on a magazine article, that it's a lot easier to sell. So yeah, I get a lot of questions about what's the right supplement, what's the right abdominal exercise to take off this one specific area of fat. So what I do is I try to educate my clients that it's a balance. It's not any one thing. It's the totality of everything you're doing. It's your sleep. It's your lifestyle. It's your it's the stress. It's your total exercise. It's your activity level. Most of us are extremely sedentary. I just got back from a CKFMS, the Functional Movement Screen Seminar by Greg Cook, and he said something fascinating. He said, and it totally makes sense, that if you're not weight-bearing on your feet 8 hours a day minimum, you're sedentary. Most people don't hunt for food. Most people are not out farming and doing agriculture in their backyard. We're a sedentary culture. So, and then you get people, no, that's not true. You know, I work out 30 minutes. Yeah, but you work out 30 minutes maybe three times a week or four times a week. That can never touch or even, I mean, that's so little of your day. So I would say that most people just need to generally move more. And I would call that your non-exercise movement. So you're not trying to get exercise, but you just need to generally move more. People need to park farther away from malls. They need to, whenever they have stairs or an elevator, take the stairs. Joanne and I went on a Disney cruise a couple years ago, and we made a pact. We basically said, okay, well, the waiter told us that the average weight gain on a cruise, average, is 7 pounds. Everybody wow. gains at least 7 pounds. Average, some are more. Some or less. We didn't gain any weight. We also didn't go super crazy on the food, but we took the stairs up and down that entire Disney cruise. So things like that that you wouldn't think really make a difference, Josh, make a difference. When we fly somewhere, and if we have a layover somewhere, guess what we're doing? We're doing sprints up the stairs in the airport. Yeah, we do about 10 minutes of sprint. Everywhere you go, you can get little mini workouts in, and you might not feel like it's an hour-long workout, but it doesn't matter because it adds up. So if you can educate people that it's the totality of everything you're doing, all the energy that you're expending, you're basically building yourself a metabolism. The more you do, assuming that you're not killing yourself, but the more activity you get that's not super, super tough on your body, the better. Move, walk. I don't even consider that exercise. You just need to be active. Most people are so inactive, it's crazy. So just teaching people that, listen, you have to take accountability of your health. Be accountable. Be responsible. Walk. Drive less. Get a dog. Walk your dog. Go out with your girlfriend, your husband and wife. Walk more. Just basic things like that over months, over years will have huge lasting effects for the rest of your life. So just getting people to make a decision once, like, I'm going to live like this. And that's how I'm going to live. And nothing's going to stop me. I'm going to be active. I'm still going to do my workouts because it's in those hard, kind of brief, intense anaerobic workouts like kettlebells or Olympic lifting or whatever it is that you like to do, coupled with an active lifestyle and sensible eating. It's there's really no excuse. We all should be fairly lean, in my opinion, but we're not.
Well, and to predicate that, or to go along with that sort of concept, you know, I think a lot of people that have enjoyed the benefits of kettlebells and different programs also feel like there's an exercise that they're missing out on. You know, really, I mean, there's a lot of different drills being taught right now. You know, what should people put their focus on? When you say the basic, the fundamentals, where should most of their energy be placed?
Okay, well, I think that's probably one of the best questions because everybody, that is one of the comments that we had at the NSCA seminar. At the first seminar at the beginning of October that Pavel did, at the very end, they announced that I was going to be teaching the level two. And then a lot of the people contacted the guy who was putting on the seminar at his physical therapy clinic and basically said, well, we want more variety. We want a lot more exercises. The challenge is that they had not mastered those six exercises that Pavel taught. So how am I going to teach them lunging and step-ups and all these fancy kettlebell juggling when they haven't even mastered the basics? What do I mean by the basics? Well, the basics are the swing, the Turkish get-up, a clean, I would put a press in there, some kind of a squat, and a snatch. So those six. So if you haven't mastered those six exercises, I would say that, and if I even had to narrow it down, I would just say, just work on your swing. Because the swing, and maybe the Turkish get-up, I'd probably anchor those two in there as well, that the swing and the Turkish get-up give you all of the necessary tools that you will need to do every other kettlebell exercise. The swing teaches you how to move out of your hips, and that's where athletic performance is found. It's found in the hips. So if you're doing all these fancy, smancy juggling exercises, and not that there's anything wrong with that. I actually do them from time to time. I think they're fun. But true athleticism and true power and strength comes from your hips. What could be better than working on a swing? So what I'm always trying to do is trying to chop exercises away from people, trying to make them do less. Some people email me and say, oh, well, I'm doing these 10 exercises on Monday. I'm doing these 15 exercises on Tuesday. Then, no. Do less. The more I train people, the more I study myself, the more I learn about my own body, the more importance I see in getting really good at the movements that really count. And the movements that really count with kettlebells, number one is the swing. Because if you can do the swing and get into that bottom position, learn how to load up your hips, keep your spine long, learn how to really root your feet into the ground, then everything else is a lot easier. Then the clean is easier. Then the snatch is easier. But if you don't get the swing down, then you don't really get kettlebell training. And unfortunately, that person is going to say, I tried kettlebells. It wasn't that big of a deal. I didn't really see any changes. Well, the reason they didn't see any changes is because they didn't get the technique down, and they never really gave it an honest effort. And I'm convinced, especially in my own body, after really working on swings myself this year, that if you can get the swing down and you just keep an honest diet of swings in your program, they can be single arm, they can be two-handed, they can be two kettlebells at the same time. But as long as you're emphasizing the movement of learning to use your hips in a very explosive manner, getting the hip extensors firing, your hamstrings, your glutes, your abs, I don't care what sport you do, that is the most sport-specific exercise you'll get, if I can use that term, swings. And I think people are really missing the boat when they're trying to jump to so many different exercises before they've really given this an honest effort. So, and I also believe that even if you do swings just give you, or any other exercise, Olympic lifting, squats, lunges, step-ups, rings, weighted chin-ups, they give you the potential to be a good athlete. But they nothing will make you a good athlete in your sport unless you play your sport. So it's basically, it's still GPP for me. Any other training you do apart from your sport is just conditioning to give you the potential to go back to your sport and be better. But it's not a guarantee. It gives you basic athletic qualities that you'll need for your sport, but if you don't focus on the sport, you won't get the results.
Well, and I want to bring up a sort of interesting point because you were talking about mastering. And recently I got in discussion with someone who was trying to persuade people not to buy my DVD on sandbag training because they're like, well, it's a bag of sand. How hard is it? And, you know, if you look at kettlebells, you know, a similar situation or thing could be said, well, it's a ball of a handle, how complicated it can be. And the truth of the matter, you and I have worked with thousands of people, and it can be actually quite complicated. We don't want to make rocket science out of it, but there's definitely finer points to everything. So, you know, when you say master a movement, how does someone know that they really become proficient? Because I'm sure a lot of people are listening right now going, well, I've done swings for a long time. I've got it down. You know, in your opinion, what makes someone very proficient and mastery of a movement?
Well, one, I think you'll be more durable. You won't be as prone to injury. you know, if you're anatomically and biomechanically linking up your body properly, you don't get injured, or your potential for injury is much less. So that, I would say, is number one. When you hear people of getting injured all the time, I get injured again. Oh God, what are they doing? You shouldn't get injured when you're training. So if people are constantly getting injured, I'm thinking, okay, there's something off here. Either one, they're just doing the wrong movement and it's not appropriate, or they're knuckleheads. They're not focusing on the technical aspects of that lift. When I first started doing kettlebells, I used to get injured doing swings. And I was so frustrated because everybody was talking about how good swings were. I'm like, well, shoot, they're not that good for me because I keep injuring my back. I had a session with Pavel. I went to the RKC. I've been back every year to the RKC ever since. I've studied under you. I've studied under Mike Mahler. I've studied under anybody that knows anything about kettlebells. And you start to learn from different people, different things. And before you know it, all the practice and years of practice, I don't have any back pain. In fact, if I do have back pain, the one thing that helps me the most is swings. Now, that didn't happen overnight, but it was through a continual learning and refining of such a basic movement as a swing. I think that most people, we just want such fast results that if we do the swing and we're not instantly dunking the basketball or we haven't lost a lot of weight that it doesn't work, it's not true. It's just a total fallacy. So when I say master a movement, one, yes, one, you're more durable, but two, you should be getting stronger at other things. Your sport, let's say you do judo, you should be... Something should be different about the way that you do judo. If you are a tennis player, you should notice that you have more power. So when I say master a movement, I mean that you see a tangible, noticeable difference in your conditioning, in your ability to resist fatigue, but also in your performance. If you're not performing well, or if you're performing worse, something's going on. I would say you've probably not mastered the movement. You either have the wrong movement or you're just not doing it right. So that's more or less what I mean when I say master the movement. But I mean, I don't know if you can ever master the movement, but I think you can come to a level to where you can use a heavy enough load to where you will see such an impact in your power and in your strength and in your conditioning that it will be very obvious that you're getting better at whatever your goal is, whatever your long-term objective or short-term goal is.
Well, yeah, Franz, I think it's a great explanation, and we are getting towards the end of this hour, and I really appreciate it, because I a lot of people don't appreciate that. A lot of the people that I'm talking with, you guys are working with people every day, and you got clients to get to and a facility to run, so I won't take up too much more of your time. But I want you to tell people basically a little bit more about your program. Where can they get? What should they expect? And, if they have any questions, how to contact you.
Sure. Great. Well, first of all, I just want to thank you for letting me do this interview, Josh. It's always fun to talk to you and talk about sports and training. I think that's what we talk to when we're off the phone too. But okay. Well, first of all, if you don't live in San Diego, you're probably not going to see us live unless you come to a seminar of ours. But probably the first thing to do is to check out our website, and our website is revolutionlajolla.com, LAJOLLA.com, and that has information on our products. Like I mentioned earlier, we have a new DVD that's out called The Quick Results Kettlebell Workout. It's a follow-along DVD. It's very challenging. The reviews on it have been great. People have been very, very pleased with it. It's actually filmed in HD, and it's filmed in a beautiful area in La Jolla, so the scenery is really nice, too, so you get a nice combination. Our first program that we did that we came out with 3 years ago is the Revolution Kettlebell Fat Loss Program, and that is a book that has the entire 12 weeks of training. It has goal setting. It has grocery shopping. It has everything from recipes to how to structure your meals every 2 or 3 hours. And basically maps out a program on how to combine the kettlebells with lifestyle and sleep. And I think most people like it because it's just such a common sense approach. You read it and you're like, wow, this just makes sense. I have to eat real food. I have to eat less. I have to move more. If you're doing the program, that's going to force you to move more right there. And also it keeps you accountable. It gives them a goal and something tangible And it gives them a timetable that they can say, okay, cool, I've got 12 weeks, I can do this. I'm going to take a picture of before and after. I'm going to take goals and snapshots in between the program so that I know that I'm making progress. And we're basically just guiding you and training you during this 12-week program. So that is probably, you know, that's what kind of put us on the map, is that program. And essentially what it was, Josh, is it was our years of experience of working with clients, and we just took it and we just transferred it into a 12-week program, a book and a DVD. And apart from that, if anybody is ever in the San Diego area, we have a fitness center called Revolution Fitness Center. It is in downtown La Jolla. We have kettlebell classes Monday through Saturday, and we also offer some private instruction as well. So my email, my own personal email, is franz@revolutionlajolla.com. My name is F-R-A-N-Z, Z as in zebra, franz@revolutionlajolla.com. I'd be happy to talk to any of your listeners, Josh, and see what they have to say.
I really appreciate it, Franz, and let me just give you an endorsement, too, because, you know, you and I have known each other quite some time, and we've been through a lot of the same programs. So, you know, there's very few people that have been doing kettlebells, and more importantly, instructing people how to implement and, you know, properly use kettlebells than Franz. So definitely a great product, and you and your lovely wife obviously have worked and made such a profound difference in so many people's lives that it's really a must-have our DVD for people that want to improve their overall fitness, whether they want to complement it with some of their other training, like our sandbags, or if they want to use it as a standalone system. It's a great DVD system. It's really easy to utilize and implement. So I'd again, thank you for your time, Franz. And, you know, again, another great interview. We look forward to hopefully seeing you soon. And this is Josh Hankin from SandbagFitnessSystems.com.